Okay, so we'll go ahead and get started. This is the third of our Q&A panel discussions. This one we're devoting to IT pro space, so installation, upgrade, configuration, that sort of thing. We're going to start with some panel introductions, and then we're going to take a look at kind of the top five questions that we get asked all the time. And then we're going to open it up to the floor for your questions. And if you can come and use the mic in the aisle here, that would help for the sake of our recording. And if you can limit yourself to one question, that would be appreciated so we can try and get to as many of your questions as we can. So you guys want to do quick intros? Adrian?
My name is Adrian Jenkins. That's loud. I'm a senior escalation engineer, so I help on the support side of project, and well, that's what I do.
My name is Brian Smith. I'm also an escalation engineer, same kind of thing as Adrian, so I do what he does.
I'm Brian Kettimer.
I'm Brian Kettimer, and I work for a couple different partners. I work for DeltaBond and a few other other partners, and I am in the MVP program. And I spent a few years at Microsoft Consulting Services doing project server deployments.
I'm Stephen Hayden, MCS, Microsoft Consulting Services Architect. I'm based in Paris.
I'm Chris Owell. I'm a tester in Microsoft Project. I deal primarily in areas related to server infrastructure and performance.
Similar to Elwell, I'm in the engineering org for the product, and I'm a senior program manager. I don't know if I said my name, so Chris Boyd. Can't remember.
Okay, cool. So we're going to start with the top five questions. The first one, Stephen Hayden is going to answer for us. How are the requirements for Project Server 2013 different from 2010?
Okay, so regarding the requirements, the requirements have changed because the architecture has slightly changed between the two versions, the 2010 and 2013. First of all, the minimum requirements are for SharePoint 2013. So the minimum hardware requirements for SharePoint 2013 is 4 core servers and 12 gigabytes of memory. And for Project Server, it's also 4 cores and 16 gigabytes of memory. Chris can explain the why those 4 more gigs for Project Server.
So Project Server requires a little bit more memory than our SharePoint counterpart, primarily because we do a bunch of things additional, like the queue and the project calculation service that we added in this release that is basically the torn-down version of the project client that gives you the consistent scheduling experience between client and server. So spinning up those additional project clients in the background puts a little bit more constraint on the hardware, so 4 more gigs. But, you know, I wouldn't stick to the minimum. Memory is relatively cheap. It's not a place to cheap out on. Put as much memory as you possibly can, and you'll have a much happier user community.
Cool. So question number 2, Adrian. Does Project Professional need to be at the same CU as Project Server?
The question is, does it need to be at the same level? When we do cumulative updates or patches, however you want to do it, public updates and even service packs, we always try to make sure that there's not a dependency between the fix that we do in the client with the fix that we do on the server and vice versa. Now, there are occasions where a fix will, in order to get the full thing, you would have to install both the server fix and the client fix. But the knowledge base article that is associated with such fix would tell you that. In fact, it would have a reference back and forth saying, you know, to get this, you need to also do this. But we also try to make sure that the fix, that if you don't have one or the other, nothing bad will happen. It's just that you won't get the effect of the fix itself. We have done, in the way past, we actually had a couple of fixes where it was highly recommended that you do have both the client and the server patch matching perfectly, And of course, after that, you could have a mismatch, but that's very, very rare. And again, the knowledge base articles that talk about that will give you the information that you need. But in the most general cases, if you're at, let's say, SP2 on the server and SP1 on the client, that's okay. That's not going to put you in an unsupported state. We do have, however, if you look at the support lifecycle, we will you'll see something that says, okay, right now for 2010, we support from SP1 on. So if you have, let's say, an RTM server and you want us to support you, we'll say, well, first thing you need to do is install SP1. Then you're in a supported state. And then at some point in the future, I'm sure it'll move out to be that you need to have at least SP2 installed. So there's those kind of rolling waves of the life cycle itself. But again, it doesn't mean that the clients and the servers can't connect to each other and work properly if they are at a different level. Now, in 2010, you may be familiar with the server setting that allows you to specify which version the client needs to be in order to connect to the server. That's still available in 2013, and that's a good idea to set that, just so that you as a in your organization, you can control that rogue person who has the old version of Project Pro, for example, is trying to connect to the server. Not that it wouldn't work, it's just that if you want to have better control over that, you can do that through the server. Now, I think I rambled a little bit there, but hopefully that answered the question.
There is one other point on the version control, which we run into with a 2013 server, in that that version control also affects the scheduling engine from the schedule web part. It shouldn't really matter too much, but in October we actually had a slight difference in the version between the scheduling engine on the server and the client.
Wow.
WinProj. So you could get to a point where you're putting in the version for WinProj and then you go to the scheduled web part and try and edit something and it won't work, and if you look in the logs it'll say that you've got the incorrect version. And it's because there's a slight sort of fourth decimal place difference between the version that the server was reporting on the scheduling engine and the client side.
That sounds like something we just need to figure out and fix.
Yeah, I don't think it happened in December, but just in case you happen to see that problem or you can't edit in the schedule web part, that might be it.
Cool, okay. Question number 3 for Brian Smith. When upgrading from Project Server 2007 or 2010, can I keep both Project Server 2013 and the older version?
Sorry, I missed the...
So when you're upgrading from 2007 or 2010 to 2013, can you keep 2013 and the older version?
Well, the client or the server?
Server.
I'm done.
We're having problems with the questions here.
Yeah, I'm problems with the question. Can we have questions?
Are the questions you have on the slide?
Well, we don't want to blind you with the projector, but yeah.
We were good.
Okay. So, yes.
All right. Okay. I'm sorry. I was getting confused there. I mean, the transfer of the data to 2013 is destructive of the 2010 databases you start with. So you can't go from 2007 anyway. You need to go through 2010. And when you create 2013, you're basically doing an upgrade of the 2010 databases in place. Well, I won't say in place because that infers something that it isn't. But the databases that you use during the upgrade process actually get changed. So we're changing the stuff in the existing 4 databases and we're then copying it into the new single database. So the database that you started with is no longer a 2010 database. It's a set of 4 databases that contain similar stuff to what's in 2013, so they won't work. So whenever you're doing an upgrade, you need to make a copy of your databases, and it's the copy that you're upgrading rather than your actual databases. So the answer to the question is, yes, you can keep them because they'll be on a totally different server and you'll be doing all your 2013 stuff hopefully on a copy that's on a new server. So, sorry I got off to a slow start there.
Cool, okay. Question number 4 for Adrian. after upgrading, do I need to republish all projects?
The question is, after upgrading, do you need to republish all your projects? I guess it depends on what you're really looking for, but the general answer would be no. Within the published database itself, you have all the same information that was there when you upgraded. So if a project showed that you had 3 tasks in the published database and there were 5 tasks in the draft database, you'll still show the 3 tasks in the published database. Now, as a normal part of your just going through your work and so forth, those projects will get published as you accept updates and so forth. But if these are old projects, let's say that are almost in an archive state and things of that nature, there's no need for you to go through and republish everything. That data is still there, still in the reporting database. You're good to go.
Okay, cool. Question number 5 for Ryan Kennemer. I have multiple departments using Project Web App. How do I keep everything organized?
There's a couple of different ways of doing that. One is more a security standpoint, and that's making sure that people, if you've got a requirement where people that are in one department can't see stuff see the projects from another department, that would be handled with security categories and groups, where you'd have a security group for each department, potentially, possibly more than one, depending on what you need to do. Maybe team members from one. There'd be a team member group and a project manager group and a viewers group for each of the departments, perhaps. That would entirely depend on your security requirements and how secretive your departments are amongst each other. The other side of it would be if your departments have very different ways of describing their project, so they end up with different custom fields. You'd want to make use of the departments feature inside Project Server, where you can link users and link projects to a department, and also link the certain custom fields to a department. Again, it won't hide those fields completely. There will be ways where they can still see that in some areas of the product, but in most of the areas, it will make it where someone in Department A won't immediately be see all the fields from all the other departments. So those are the two places that you can handle that. If you've got vastly different security needs, I've seen some organizations get upset about the idea of through reporting, if they're using SSRS and they're going against a reporting database, they're very worried about whether someone can view projects that way sometimes, or you've got vastly different needs for the way you describe things. I have seen an organization have 2 instances of Project Server that have their own set of users, and then they handle the reporting across those at a higher level, having a report pointing at both of the instances in SQL against a reporting database. But it's mainly it's a big set of ifs around security and how worried people are about whether they can see things across departments. So.
Cool. Okay. So we do want to take the bulk of this time to get to your questions. This is really a Q&A for all of you, for our panel here. So at this point, we're going to turn it over to the floor. And if you have questions, come on up to the mic. And we've got some excellent brain power here to help you out.
And if you'd like to sit in this chair right here, you can do it.
You can come up and answer questions if you'd like, yeah. It's going to be a really short session if no one stands up.
Can I get back to the republishing if you're migrating from 2010 to 2013? What if you're using multi-select fields? The backup and restore of those custom fields is going to republish all your projects, correct?
So I'm trying to understand the where the multi-select fields comes in and what that has to do with you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, here. During the upgrade, the multi-select fields, the views for those multi-select fields disappear. And to restore those views, we do a backup of the custom fields and restore the custom fields. And that causes a republish of those projects too.
So which views are you seeing the multi-select go away in?
All of the multi-select views are gone in the upgrade process.
Well, that sounds like a bug to me, but
yeah.
I'm not.
But
you,
there's,
you
a,
know
good,
about
but there's a good workaround.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of that described, and certainly it sounds like a bug. And what you're saying, if you back up and restore various pieces of the metadata, then that will trigger a reporting database refresh. So, I mean, it is a way to sort of get a nice, clean, new, shining reporting database again. It's not something you really want to do when people are using the system too much, because it sort of kicks off a publish of everything and rebuilds the reporting database completely. But it's a good workaround for that particular situation by the sound of it, but it's probably not the right way to solve that one. We should be looking at that and getting that one fixed, I think. Yeah, thanks, Nelson.
Except her.
No, you were talking about the versions, so you've got your project server version and then your client version. So I just wanted some clarification, because I've seen a lot of people, like Paul Mather's blog mentions, that the clients all have to be the same if they're connecting to the server. Have you experienced problems? Anyone know what I'm talking about? So if you have like four different versions of the client connecting to the server, especially if they update the same schedules, have you noticed issues arising with that? Because it's just best practice, but you're the only person I've seen say that, really.
So. It's definitely a best practice, and it's not a bad thing to say all of my clients need to be the same version, stuff like that. But let's suppose that you've within the server settings, you've said that I need it to all be at least the August 2013 CU, okay? That doesn't mean that if someone has installed the December 2013 CU, that the August guy shouldn't work or so forth. I mean, obviously, you want to try to, at some point, figure out, well, do I need to make sure that maybe I bump that up to the December CU or something of that nature? But the times when you would get into trouble would be, let's suppose that there's a bug in 2013 or even in 2010 professional, okay? And when I open up the schedule, I introduce that bug into the schedule, okay? Then the guy or gal who opens up that project with the client version that doesn't have the bug, they may see that right away, and then maybe their work fixes it or whatever. And so you can introduce bugs into the schedule, and so that's why you need to look at what has been fixed in the cumulative updates and say, well, is this a cumulative update that I care about because I have these issues? If so, then maybe set that server setting so that only those people who have at least that version and above can connect.
So part of the reason I'm asking is that our IT group recently pushed Service Pack 2 for 2010 to a bunch of our people, but not all of our people, and we don't have Service Pack 2 on the server yet, and it caused a bunch of issues. And I'm looking for some like actual backing from Microsoft so I can really tell them, don't do that. You know, but they're like, well, but you know, they don't say that you can't do that. They don't, you know, so I was just trying to figure out if there was a more official place I could find that information so I could kind of push back to them to have them stop messing with stuff. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, we'd probably need to know what those issues were to get a sort of better idea of what might have caused that, to be able to give you that kind of sort of feedback.
Badness.
But the badness is very broad.
the other thing, just to sort of throw in another piece of info on the version thing, how many people have ever seen something that says check-in pending at all? Any? Yeah. A few, yeah. I did see one hand not go up, but somebody, I think it was on an internal alias we've got, is convinced that if you have the server and the client version at exactly the same release, you don't see check-in pending. And, you know, although we've got no evidence to state that that will make any difference whatsoever, I'm always wary of saying that couldn't possibly be the case. So I just throw that out there. It's just sort of a hypothetical thing, and I can't see any valid reason why that should make any difference. But somebody claims that it always works when they do that. It's probably something else that I do while they're making that happen that fixes it, but just sort of throw it out there.
Speaking of check-in pending, we just ran a small handful of maybe 50 to 100 people on ours. The queue was significantly a hindrance and constantly jamming up and having to reset and reset and reset. We even had Microsoft look at it. In 2013, did you work on making improvements to that? And if you did, I missed the architecture section. So if you could explain what they did to try and improve that, that would be helpful.
You want me to take it? I can take this.
You can take it, but we'd also have to understand what were the jam-ups that you were seeing, because it could have nothing to do with the queue itself, which is really just a brokering service that says go out and do something. But if there's something that's broken out when it goes out to do something, then that would be the part that would have to be fixed, not necessarily the queue itself. But go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. So in 2013, like, well, everything Adrian said is true. Without knowing the very specifics and the messages that were failing, I can't promise that we solved your issues. What I can say is that we actually spent a significant amount of time and effort investing in improving the queue in 2013 and making it more resilient to issues. In particular, we've made it a farm-level service that services the entire farm, not individual tenants. And as part of that work, making it much more resilient to issues, so that one particular tenant that might have a queue failure is not going to affect another tenant. So there's been a bunch of resiliency added to the queue to make it much more stable in this release. But then again, I'm not sure if we solved your particular issues, but it's definitely come a long way since 2010.
One of the other things that can obviously affect the queue is SQL Server. So some queue problems aren't necessarily project or project server, but underlying SQL things. One thing we've seen a few customers hit, particularly when you get a lot of jobs added to the queue very quickly, such as you might do if you're running an AD sync or even a reporting database refresh, SQL can then get pretty confused because it's got an execution plan to work out what job am I going to be doing next in the queue. And if there's only like three jobs in the queue, then it's probably easier to do a table scan and just sort of look through. And then you can get to a situation where suddenly there's 20,000 jobs in the queue. That execution plan's not as efficient anymore, and you can see that the sprocs that are sitting there saying, no, what work do I do next, sort of they have to avoid certain things clashing. They can start taking sort of 10, 20, 30 seconds instead of sort of 100 milliseconds. So we have seen those kind of things slow down, and that can be more down to how SQL's configured to some extent than really the project server stuff. We're looking into those kind of issues as well, because there might be some things that we can do to make sure that SQL doesn't get confused, but we have seen some of those things cured by SQL service packs. Had one customer running into this, I think it was 2008 R2, and he loaded a service pack and it seemed to go away. But we have seen customers with 2012 also sort of run into this kind of issue. So, you know, it needn't necessarily be the queue that's playing up. It could be data either coming from project or it could be at the other end in SQL Server, but we'd need to know so what your jam-ups were to know whether we've really done anything about them.
Hi. I was wondering if anyone had experienced a similar issue to what we have. The reporting wizard will not run. It will act as though it hasn't been configured if I have anonymous access enabled in SharePoint, which I have to do because of an external software that we use that saves to SharePoint and does not have its own service account. And so I've narrowed it down to the fact that when I disable anonymous access, the reporting wizard works beautifully. When I enable it, it does not. It will give me the message that says it needs to be configured, which I'm positive it already was. And I just wondered, I've tried both Bing and Google, and no one seems to know. So, same web app. Sure, we could. But I mean, I wondered if there was any connection in particular that someone might know.
So which piece exactly isn't working? We're just not clear.
The reporting wizard in PWA.
Reporting wizard in PWA. 2010.
You're
talking about when it launches the app?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a bit, you click on it in the business intelligence section, it launches an app.
The report builder.
You're talking about in report builder 3.0 for SQL.
In project web access. I'm not really sure what it's in the business intelligence center in project web access. The report builder.
Yeah, I mean the only thing I can think of in that sort of area might be to do with the secure store and the authentication against the secure store, but that if it's in the BI center, then it's probably not specifically our stuff. I'm not trying to sort of get out of it.
Obviously, it's our stuff in Microsoft terms,
but it's not.
Yeah, we don't really own the BI Center. I'm not trying to excuse us, but we've added the SharePoint BI Center below us in PWA, and I'm not familiar with this particular issue.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, if it's an authentication type problem, it sounds as if it might be also related to like the secure store in terms of how that's configured. It's expecting to be hit by a particular account, and then it sort of will use another account to get at the data. Just wonder if it's something like that. But
okay. All right, thank you.
But open an incident, and we can probably dig a bit deeper.
Okay. Or even short of that, after the session, if you go down to the Microsoft Pavilion downstairs, where there's kind of lots of Microsoft people, there might be someone there a different set than this, at least, that might know, that might have more specific BI Center knowledge.
So in other words, Brian's saying, I'll be down there, and you can talk to him.
Hi, Mike Wallman, Project Host. I got first an observation and then second a question. As far as the observation is concerned, it seems to me that there's an ability within SharePoint Designer to develop certain kinds of workflows that when executed will fail. And perhaps there might be some way to improve SharePoint Designer to check for certain statuses on the server, make sure it's set up correctly, and warn the user or us as a provider that there's an issue there that needs to be fixed or this workflow will fail. And second, a question around best and worst practices in regards to development instances when you have either within the same farm or a separate farm a copy of the databases that would be production and development.
Yeah, I mean the first one's quite tricky because obviously SharePoint Designer won't necessarily have all the rules to know what will and won't work on the server. So it'd be very difficult for SharePoint. I mean it'd be a pretty big extensibility to be able to sort of work out, okay, what kind of things do I need to check based on different things that it might be finding on the server in different environments with different workflow managers and so on. But yeah, the rule checker on SharePoint Designer is pretty basic. It will sort of say, well, I can't see anything wrong with it, but you know, that doesn't mean that it's going to work.
Yeah, but the list of things it can't do, that's a tough set of things to come across.
I would just add, if you have the list of things that you have in mind that we should be checking, it would be good to give us that list, and we can definitely pass that feedback on to the SharePoint Designer team. They're not too far from us, so I can provide the feedback to them and say, hey, why aren't you checking these 3-4 things?
And the second question was around...
I forgot what
it was. Best and worst practices. Best practices for having a development copy of your production database, and it was the question around where's the best place to put that in relationship in the farm architecture?
Within and or without using the same farm structure. What's the best? I mean, what would you guys say is the best way to handle that?
It depends. Well, if you're testing fixes where you need to update the farm, you know, the binary bits and stuff like that, obviously you're going to have a different farm. But sometimes all you want to do is test the data, the interaction of the data and so forth. So you can do that with your database in the same farm as your production. But of course you'd have to look at, well, what does that mean for performance and all those kind of good things. But it really depends on what you're trying to accomplish here. But most of our customers will have a separate environment simply because they're going to be using that as a staging place to put on cumulative updates and so forth, and obviously you want to test that out in your development environment first before you put it into production.
Yeah, I usually like to have it, you know, sometimes I've had different levels of development. I mean, if you're talking about, you know, having an environment available for someone to go in and add a new custom field and see what kind of, you know, PDPs they're doing, there's that kind of development where I feel like it's probably, for the most part, safe to have that pretty much anywhere. If you're talking about development, like, you know, having developers loose with, you know, SharePoint designing things and adding extensibility, I would probably want that one as far away as possible. on different SQL servers, on different farms and things, and potentially different physical hardware depending on how crazy your developer is. Yeah, there's that, and you, if you're doing that, and if you've got PDPs and workflow stuff, you want to make sure you're also bringing your content database over, obviously, and that sometimes can be problematic depending on what other stuff was there in your production environment versus what's there. So there's definitely experimentation to be done in that sense.
So I would definitely strive for separate environments, and add on the fact that I would force developers to script the heck out of getting your stuff in bits and deployed, and then performing those same scripts as they go through a QA farm and then to a production farm, which is similar how we do it in engineering. We have our own personal farms as we're developing and building the product and building new features, and then it goes through a set of validation rings as we push stuff out through the various farms worldwide. So it goes to a QA farm, an internal EDOG farm, then into our MSIT through Microsoft, and then out to 3 production farms, 10 production farms, 20 production farms, and to do it in waves, and that every single time you move from one environment to the other environment, it's 100% automated. So that way, the same steps are performed in the same action, so that way you get a good, smooth transition.
I think from the support perspective, just having some other environment is always good.
So going back to security, in regards to product server permissions mode, what dictates or how do you control what, for example, you talked about dividing security so that you can have 3 different custom groups, categories to control who sees what's projects. But how does that affect the product sets that are created for those various groups? For example, if you have people that are 3 different project managers, they'll have access to all the product sites across the organization, from what I've seen. Is there a way to control that?
Yeah, so it would depend on how your categories are set up, but often you can have a group called called project managers, and there's a category that says that either they can and often there it's linked to more than one category. There's the kind of the my organization category that's out of the box, and that's kind of the, I can see every, all current and future projects, and I can do these few things on them. So there's the group and the category, and then when you link a group to a category, there's like that third grid that pops down, and that's the what can this group do to the projects that are in that category. And so if you've got a category that is all current and future, and you've got the checkboxes checked for a group to view the site or to edit projects and things, they'll have that on those items. And then often a project manager group is associated with what's called the My Projects category out of the box, and that's all the projects that they are the owner of, or that they are a status manager on. And often that'll have a different set of permissions. And so are you saying you want the project managers to have less access to all the other projects or more access?
To no access. So want it fully separated.
So if you're talking about an out-of-the-box configuration, what I would do is for the project managers, I would remove their association to the My Organization category.
Okay.
And that would end up making it do this in a test environment first, obviously. That is as close or as far as you've deemed necessary.
But those get synced over in the project web app sync groups.
Right, and yeah. So if you removed them from the project managers group from that My Organization category, then in the out of the box environment, counting that you haven't made any changes that you've probably made, so. In this generality, they would probably then only be able to see projects where they're the owner of the project, and that would remove. They wouldn't be able to see projects in the project center, or be able to have access to the SharePoint groups. The exception would be if they're a project manager on some projects and a team member on other projects.
Yeah.
Then of course they're getting access to those things as a team member. So it's not going to guarantee that they can't see things, but they're just not going to be able to see it via their membership in the project managers group.
It's okay.
It's just a comment. So see, the Microsoft, they use RBS, and then the project ownership Okay. Hi, my name is Ricardo, and about risks. Okay. I have a problem with risks because I need to eliminate the exposition risks due to the maturity of the customer. So what happens is I want to create a template of the project site, and if I eliminate these fields, the risk and the calculated fields, and I create a template, when I create the new project, it fails to create the site. Okay, this happened in 2007 and 2010. I didn't test it in 2013.
Yeah, it'll break in 13 too.
Yeah, okay, right.
Consistency.
Consistent, okay. Is there any way to override this problem?
I would, instead of deleting those fields, I would just remove them from the views.
Remove.
So you've got the view, you know, in a list, you've got the views. You can say, show me this and filter it this way, filter it that way. I would just remove them from those views. And in the field area, you can go in there and you can say, show this in the default view or show this in the form. I would just remove those things. Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't delete them because the publishing counts on that.
In the description fields for those, right? Don't delete.
Right.
It's usually when we're pushing the stuff over to the reporting database that it gets very confusing when it can't find what it needs to put there. I guess we could sort of look, and if it's not there, then we just carry on rather than failing, but
right.
Yeah, and I would just not delete. I think.
And one thing, it's a very worrisome error message when you're looking in the queue. It's not publishing your project. It's just not publishing the issue and risk stuff over to the reporting database. So it's a troubling error message. It's not. In practice, it's not quite as troubling as...
Yes, okay.
The ULS log will say that the WSS sync, something to that effect, failed.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. And another question about this is, when I create a new field in this same document, in the risks, I didn't find out this new field in the database.
No, you won't.
Absolutely. Sorry about that.
Okay, thank you. That's all.
Thank you.
Hey, two quick questions. First one's on capacity planning. When you guys do the documentation on that, there's the definition of small, medium, and large data sets, and there's a differentiation between users and concurrent users, but the documentation doesn't specify whether the data sets are defined by users or concurrent users. So are there general guidelines for that in terms of number of concurrent users connecting?
The data set, is this thing on? Data set definitions themselves were based on total number of users in the resource pool. As far as concurrent users go, are you referring to the actual test documentation that we have on the topic, or
it's the planning capacity planning for Project Server 2013.
Yeah. So for the most part, there a lot of that was just if you're referring to the actual test documents, we just kind of scaled up the number of concurrent users until we maxed out the throughput.
Okay. Yeah,
so it was a rather simplistic approach. And for the most part, I want to say that a lot of those tests were, I don't know if I recall, it's been a while since I did it, but it was probably like 30 or so concurrent actual users, but we weren't talking much in the way of think times or sleep times in between. They were making requests as fast as they could.
Okay.
So for your own capacity planning exercises, that's something you would certainly want to tweak.
And then follow-up question, between Project 2010 and Project Server 2013, the inability of the Project Pro client 2010 to work with Project Server 2013, obviously a tough conversation when you have to have that with a CIO. You got to rebuy all these licenses. But do you see with the pace of innovation shortening and these release cycles becoming shorter that there will be fewer breaking changes in the future?
I won't comment around the support matrix of the future client-server version. To answer your question on innovation, I know people are getting sick of us talking about Project Online, but Project Online has moved significantly further past the RTM release, and that's being iterated about twice a week. So just at this conference, while we've all been here, we are constantly pushing out changes, and Project Online has evolved since the Sunday to the Wednesday. So, yes, we're moving quickly.
Cool. Thanks.
Also, just a bit of a sales pitch on your earlier question about capacity planning stuff. I'm actually having a session in this room after this one where I'm just going to go through some of the basic architectural things that we changed in between 2010 and 2013 that if you're supporting an existing deployment, you might care about if you're thinking about migrating.
Okay. Thanks.
Just one quick question about back on the capacity planning. I'm a bit confused why, with the data sets, why the risks, there's a really low number of risks. And I think it's 20 or 40 or something. Once you go past that many risks, you have to go up to a medium-sized farm. Why it would be so low a number? Any comments about that? I would have thought you could have had quite a large number of risks.
So the way that we developed our data sets is that we worked with a bunch of people from MCS, from our MVP community to our partner community to customers and users. And we basically went out and did a bunch of surveys and asked what do you consider a small, medium, and large data set? And we compiled all of that, took averages, and that was the result. Was that many issues at risk for the small data set. I don't actually think that would have a huge impact, though, in reality.
Yeah, I wouldn't think you'd want to read those numbers that direction. If I have 42, I have to scale up to the medium-sized data set. I think it's probably just the way the data sets fell.
You should read that documentation more along the lines of, and it's always very approximate, so it's just like,
In practice, I haven't seen any problem with it. Sorry, yeah. Okay, thank you.
You guys, just a quick follow-up on that, though. There are some of those elements that matter.
Yes.
Absolutely.
About.
So not every one of those line items.
No, they're not all equal.
I'm just calling out risk specifically. I wouldn't stress about risk, but you're absolutely correct.
Yeah, the
baselines
are not risky.
And just for a minute, the big multipliers there tend to be the number of projects, the number of resources, the complexity of your RBS, and if you're using that for many of your security roles, the overall complexity of your security roles, and basically how hard you're using custom fields, especially if you're doing a project professional heavy workload, task and resource type custom fields.
How heavy your project manager is on the publishment.
Well, that too.
Hey, you guys were talking about how fast Project Online is moving. So I'm just wondering if you can talk at all about what features might be coming in Service Pack 1 for us on-prem folks. And specifically, my boss may have spoken to one of you guys yesterday. His example was the three ellipses in Project Online. If you click that link, there's a drop-down that brings you, or that you can go to your project site directly from Project Center. Might that be included in SP1, or is that further out? And is there anything else coming?
So I don't know how much we're allowed to comment on SP1, but I can tell you...
No.
Yeah, that's the short version. So from an engineering standpoint, 15 RTM, or 2013 is our sustaining branch. What you're seeing in Project Online is us continuing to build and innovate. So you'll start to see that .. the next time we ship a on-prem version of Project. So if he wants his .. and be able, he should move to Project Online. My favorite feature of that .. finally solves one of the most nitpicky things I have, which is now I can delete a project from Project Center. So it's really exciting. But
so aside from that, are there any features in online that might be coming in SP1? Or will SP1 be mostly fixes? Or can you not talk about
well,
that?
All of them might be coming.
Well, I'll just say that SP1 is about bug fixes.
Okay, cool.
But it's not feature additions and things of that nature.
And one of my least favorite features on the .. is that you can delete projects directly from there.
Your least favorite?
But as long as you've got an administrative backup running just in case you did it accidentally, good to go. Good
so
to
we
go.
Don't
I'm
want
with you,
that.
Chris.
All right, thanks.
Remember, you can still through the security model, you can still say who can delete a project,
but
regardless of where they delete it from.
I'm just going to correct myself. I had a senior escalation engineer moment there. Obviously, you can't recover from an administrative backup if you're in Project Online.
I was wondering what you were trying to...
Before I get somebody throw something at me or thinks there's a new feature coming that's been loaded since Sunday.
I thought you were pushing your archive feature back to online.
I have a question about reporting, following the information about the old data stuff. I understand you can't insert information to the Project Online through SSIS. So I was thinking, what way can I make information... go to Project Online so I can report on Excel over there. For example, I could download information from old data and mix it up with another information I have on the ERP system. Can I put that like an MDB file or an Excel file and then throw it back to Project Online and start making an ODC connection to show information and report?
So we're going to be coming up with a white paper that will show you how to use SSIS, build up your data warehouse, and then build reports, and then have them show up in what appears to be SharePoint with single sign-on. So I think yes is the answer to your question. But you wouldn't put that data back into Project Server. You would put your data in or close to that data warehouse that you're building with from the data from the SSIS, and then we'll provide the documentation of how you can surface that data back in SharePoint.
Does the Power Pivot make an LDC connection to an MDB file? Is that possible?
That I'm not sure.
Access file?
But I would see if either Mark Boyer or Mike McLean are down at the booth, and those two guys are leading the effort around SSIS and the integration work there and thinking through all those scenarios.
So. Okay, thanks.
I have a question about the creating SharePoint project sites. Okay, in Project Server 2010, there is, because we don't allow an average user to create a project site. So in the TechNet document, it says like you have to put a denial on the managing SharePoint foundation, right? And then the problem from that is whenever the user publishes a project again, we'll get a failed job, the failed job in the queue, say publishing fail. And also, you know, send an email, a notification, say your job failed. So the user gets concerned. So we have to kind of disable the whole notification, the email part of it. So in 2013, is that problem solved? Managing SharePoint Foundation, you know, you put a deny that. It's in the TechNet. It's an official.
Yeah, solution. I understand that. So you basically don't want project sites, so you're denying that so that they don't get one, but then when they publish, it'll give the error.
Yes.
So I think
it was also in order to get the feature within project so that it would not display the dialog box to you about publishing and so forth, you had to deny.
Managing SharePoint Foundation.
Yeah. Gosh, it seems like we changed something there in 2013, but I don't remember. I'd have to go look at it.
Okay.
But yeah, that was kind of a when we made that change, it was just a kind of a last minute thing to get some functionality. So it was kind of maybe a backward way to do it, but it was the only way we could do it at that point in the development cycle in 2010.
But in 2013, we do make a lot more use of the SharePoint site. So you probably want to reconsider whether you want to live without a SharePoint site, because in terms of issues and risks and that kind of thing, and some of the task behavior is actually happening in the tasks list in the SharePoint site and not necessarily in the project. So,
The reality is this, right? You know, we have a quite large installation of a project server, and we have like thousands of projects, but a lot of projects, they are just a baseline support. We don't need to have maintain a site. Otherwise, we have 6,000 websites to manage, so we only allow them to create the project sites for the really capital project, important project. So doing the migration, everything makes it easier, right? So that's kind of like a lot of companies runs that way, right? If you have a large instance. So for example, if you only use project for IT jobs, you may not care. You know, a few hundred websites is fine, even though they're empty. But for us, if we have thousands of empty sites, that's a problem for us. So
yeah, that makes sense. I'm just reaching back in my mind, and I can't remember if we've changed that or not.
Okay.
There's a new feature in 2013 in the client. When it first asks you if you want to create a site, you can say, don't ever ask me again.
So
you can just open it back up and rely on your PMs to say, don't ask me again, I'll never be asked to create them.
Right, and that's why I'm thinking that we made some changes there, but I can't remember whether it was a permission change or something else that we did besides that thing that you're mentioning.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Any other questions?
A question to Project Online. We are experiencing sometimes performance issues in Project Online when we open PDP or the Project Center. And question is, how can we report it to you? Because sometimes it's working really fine, and sometimes we have to wait 30 or 40 seconds to only open a PDP.
You go to the Office 365 Admin Center and the Support tab on the support in the left nav bar. There's an option on the right, new incident, something like that. So click on there. That will open a support call, and you can let us know that that's that's going wrong. I mean, we do active monitoring in the background anyway in terms of trying to keep an eye on those kind of things, so it may be something we already know about, but you know, having people tell us that they think the performance is bad is, you know, if our monitoring's not picking it up, we need to know that from our customers so that we know that our monitoring perhaps needs to be refined in some way.
Would it be good to know the time and the correlation?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, it'd be a good idea to know exactly when it was happening, and obviously from your tenant, we can work out exactly what network and farm and everything else you're in. Yeah. The tricky bit is when you sort of get through to the engineer and they say, you know, they can't repro, or they get you on the phone half an hour later and it's working. And that's where we probably need, as an escalation team, to try and make sure that we're the information's flowing through to us. Because even if you had to raise a support call because you felt the performance was bad enough to justify that, then just because it's working again half an hour later isn't the answer. And we need to make sure that we're getting that information sort of flowing through to us and working with the product group to identify, you know, what was happening.
So that seems like it's something that Brian and I should talk about and work on, because like he said, you may talk to the frontline support person, they'll say, looks good to me, and so they close the incident, and Brian and I would never know about it, and it would never get to the product team as well, so we need to think of a way to for that type of information to come through.
So one thing to add is, and we would much appreciate, is if you could do a Fiddler trace. I don't know if you're familiar with the Fiddler tool, but it provides a kind of a, if you're seeing those performance degradations, quickly just opening up Fiddler, taking a trace of that, and that will allow us to see what you're kind of experiencing and kind of the flow of the data happening across the wire.
We've got some special guidelines from support in how we use Fiddler, because it can capture other information that you wouldn't want to send to somebody else. So it's probably a good idea to perhaps we'll put a blog together so we can sort of put our the way we need to use Fiddler or the information we need from Fiddler, so that you can capture the information that we need without sort of contravening any of our sort of privacy and security things in terms of getting data. Because if you just happen to be, I know, buying some shoes at the same time as you're browsing to PWA, we might get your credit card number at the same time as we get your problems from PWA.
That's a good point. But you could also use Fiddler yourself. Sometimes there's issues that are between you and the data center. So maybe that's why you're experiencing it and our monitoring isn't catching it. So just you yourself can look through the Fiddler trace and see if there's anything causing some pain for the performance.
Yeah, and a good thing to do is a Fiddler trace when it works, so that you have a baseline, and then you do a Fiddler trace when it's slow, so that you can really see the difference.
Yeah, there are sometimes differences in 1 hour, so sometimes it's really working fine, and 5 seconds it's open, and 1 hour later we have to wait 30, 40 seconds to open it down.
I went to the Office 365 deployment thing on Sunday, and they were talking there about, we, as well as all the sort of active monitoring we have internally in our data centers, we also have sort of external monitors that are coming from various places as well. So we probably need to work out whether they're catching the right experience as far as project's concerned, because if they're just sort of picking up the SharePoint experience, perhaps there's other things we need to consider as well.
We definitely have our active monitoring. It's external to the data center, and SharePoint has pinging their pages. We do ping our top, like what I call our Fab 5 pages, through PWA.
And another question to Project Online and regional settings. We set our regional settings to European settings. So everything is fine, but when I save a project, I see every time when I go in again on the open dialog in Project Professional that the project was saved 9 hours ago. So there is a difference to your Redmond time, I think. The same also in SharePoint for documents. So when I upload it, I see something that it was uploaded yesterday. So when it's in the morning time for us in Europe. Is there another regional...
You get lucky and it'll show that you uploaded it tomorrow on your...
Is there another regional setting that we have to set up?
No, I mean, we've had some feedback on that, and I think we've even got an open bug. I'm not quite sure whether it's something we can...
Sorry? It's one that your team knows about.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Worried that it might be getting the eye of Verifix that on Monday.
I think the answer is we need to sort out whether we can sort of display back the right dates in terms of how we hold the dates and capturing the time zone information with the date, so that we can present back to you the right information so it matches up to what you think it should look like.
But there's nothing that you're doing incorrectly, and there's nothing that you can configure, unfortunately. It's us.
And does this mean that the data are saved in the US or in the data center in Europe, in I think, Amsterdam or Dublin? Or
I think all the data centers run on PST, Pacific time. Is that?
I believe they do.
Yeah,
I can't remember. I think at one time we were UTC. Yeah. And we changed specific. That doesn't mean, though, your data is being moved over to the U.S.
Often asked question from customers in Europe.
So the Office 365 Trust Center has all the documentation that clearly specifies where our data centers reside, and based on how you created your tenant, where your data and where what data center they landed in. And we don't have this world where Amsterdam has a failover in the U.S. I can't remember where the failover is for Amsterdam. Is it Dublin?
Dublin. It's Dublin. Dublin and Amsterdam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are some sort of more serious aspects to that rather than just, I mean, display is serious enough, but if you're Moscow or East, you can't enter time until after lunch because you're entering it in the future if you enter it in the morning. If you've got that no future time entry allowed. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
It's important that if you're going to send the full Fiddler trace to Brian that has your credit card number in it, include the 4-digit code from the back of the card.
He needs a new pair of shoes.
These are my new shoes.
I got a comment on the anonymous access in the BI center that if it's installed with SharePoint integration mode, you can't run anonymous access. So that might be the issue. I'm not sure if that is the specific issue, but that might be the answer. Anyway, my question is more about Project Online, and it's about scalability and how it gets scaled. If you're running off, you know, if you've got 1,000 users on Project Online, how is that dealt with from a capacity perspective? Is there any performance limitations that a company or a user might see from that perspective?
We would have to deal with it, which is the short answer. It's a supported scenario, and if we did run into problems, it would turn into an incident and escalation, and we would service that.
But is there any kind of advice around, you know, the total number of users potentially on Project Online or any?
Right now, we don't have any limits around the number of users.
Well, there's nothing really that you need to do. I mean, all the scaling happens at sort of the back end. I mean, your farm isn't just a few servers. Yeah. Your farm is with lots of other people, and there's lots of scale built into that farm. Obviously, if we see that the number of users that you've got are impacting that particular farm, then we either need to grow that farm or we need to potentially fail you over to another farm that's got more capacity, which is something we can do in terms of load balancing the.
Yeah, I suspect the issue is more likely to be at a local level in terms of their bottleneck, you know, network connection.
Yeah. I mean, that's it.
If you're company, so yeah.
Yeah, you've got to get all those people to the data center, and then sort of we take it from there.
So, assuming it works the same way as Office 365, generally.
I think that's the advantage of the cloud, right? It becomes our problem.
Okay.
Well, and the issue issues I think would be less about server capacity and more if you went from having 10,000 people in your site that were using on-prem, and the amount of bandwidth you would purchase from whoever your ISP was X amount, and you know the pipe was an X size. But now you're doing all of that stuff is now traveling over the internet. It's going to be less than I think that's one bottleneck to think about how the data center manager is deciding when to add a new rack. To the system, but more of you need to pay Comcast more money to get faster bandwidth now because all your people are saving everything outside instead of inside.
Okay. And what is the largest number of users you've seen in using Project Online for one company? Is there a?
I'm not sure if we would actually share that data.
Okay.
We definitely mine for it. But the NSA does not know it.
I'm just interested because we get asked these kind of questions by customers, and so
it's a fair question. I can tell you that Microsoft uses PWA extensively on our internal rings, and I like, feel comfortable sharing our MSIT numbers. So we are running over 900 instances in MSIT on a single farm, and that's a single tenant. And I'm pretty sure we're, from what I can tell, we're loading up all of the Microsoft population in there. So.
Yeah, I mean, I know that at least one of them is running up to about 17,000 resources at the moment. I mean, it's funny when you talk to people and you say we've got that many instances, and you think, well, you know, do you really need that many instances of PWA in one organization? Some of them are, you know, one man and his dog in an office somewhere are running it. Others are, you know, 17,000-20,000 users. But from our perspective, it's good having that mixture. From a from a project management PMO control perspective, it perhaps isn't ideal. I don't know, but it's good for us to have that variation because you've got that variation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Just a follow-up question with this project online. Does one company, do we have to sign up with one tenant? For example, one company, can we sign up multiple tenants? The reason I'm asking is this. So our company, we have offices all over the world. And then, you know, for us to sign up, for example, one data center in U.S., for the users in India, they may not, the latency is just too high. They're like 200-something milliseconds. So I'm thinking maybe we need to set up like multiple data center, you know, maybe different tenants so that they can access the data center closer. And then we use old data or SSIS package to merge the data on our end daily. Just idea, what do you guys think about that idea?
The issue would be the resource pool. I mean, if they're separate resource pools and each sort of country or region has its own PWA, then I think the SSIS route is a great way to sort of get those consolidated reports and still leave everybody with sort of reasonably local access.
Yeah.
If you're really a global company and you're sharing resources, then obviously you can't do that across multiple PWAs. The connectivity between the data centers and the regions is pretty good, but I don't know whether there's any... You can't sort of jump onto one and across to the other, so that I don't think there's any sort of easy ways of doing the global thing. I mean, we have got global companies that have got large PWA instances in Project Online. It's a case of really choosing where most of them are coming from.
Yeah,
but I do like the idea of having the multiples and using reporting, though, if that works in terms of how your resourcing pattern is.
Exactly. Yeah. For us, we don't use resources from other region, because we are kind of a construction kind of company. It's hard to ask them to build something, ship it over. And the other thing is about the cost. So does it matter? I sign up with one data center, sign up for one company, right? So the first, my scenario will be, for example, I sign up with three data centers. Same amount of users, 1,000 users. In terms of a cost, I still pay by number of users, right? Do I need to say, okay, how many? Do I need to pay by call center or the data center?
Your account exec would probably be able to work with you on that and decide if there was a 3,000 user cost break. You know, would you still get it if you had three 1,000 user tenants? And that'd be a conversation probably for your account exec with Microsoft.
Yeah, because that will help. Because otherwise, they'll say, you have a fixed cost for one data center.
Yeah, there's no fixed cost element to it, but it really depends on whether there's any sort of breaks at certain numbers of users. But also having the three data centers, we're just trying to think through whether if you had a user who was accessing both data centers, I don't know whether you can have directory sync to multiple places, so I don't... You'd end up, if somebody was an administrator perhaps and needed access to all three, then they might need a license in each one. So there could be a potential cost there, I think.
But you're a big enough company that your account exec is probably going to work with you and figure out ways to work with you on that. You
know? Okay, yeah, that's just a thought that came to my mind. I think the SSIS is a great idea to merge the data. Because before I was thinking about asking Microsoft to fill over, have a kind of like do a replica across all the data center, but I don't think you guys will do that, right?
No, because the data is bounded to particular data centers.
Uh-huh.
Also, it's a shared resource, right? So it's not just your company on there. There's hundreds, thousands of other companies that are in that SharePoint farm. So failing over for you would mean we'd fail over for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Thank you.
I'm not sure if I'd be able to frame this question, but I'll try and articulate what's in my head. we've just moved to Office 365, the whole stack, company-wide, 8,000 plus. But Project Online is going to be enabled currently right now, sometime in April, for less than 200 users. The team that manages Office 365, it's all with another team. Is there something that we are a subset of that whole big tenant. We are a tenant in that, large deployment. Is there something that we need to expect from this team that's supporting our workforce services? Because in terms of performance, in terms of things, I mean, if we see any behavior, are there any best practices or things that we need to reach out to these folks to say, hey, we are a small group within this large Office 365 deployment. Don't forget us. I don't know if I framed the question, but it's just a concern that
I guess in terms of raising support incidents, is there a sort of fear that is it more an internal issue for you that if you don't have administrative rights, then it's not easy for you to raise the support calls.
Okay, that's
I mean, it would certainly make sense for at least one of the people in your group to also be a company administrator or somebody who, I don't know what access level you need to get to the Office 365 admin center. But it would make sense if one of your team was in that role. Okay. It's not for us to say, but fear that your organization is going to ignore you and it'll take sort of 3 days for you to get a ticket raised within your organization before it even gets out to us, then you probably need to sort of work on getting the access you need for your group to be able to find us faster.
Yeah, because we're on a sandbox now. We're playing around a sandbox. It's very easy. Any problem here, click there, click there, click there. We're able to solve everything. And my guess is once we actually go live, we're going to be blacked out from a lot of the other things, which is the Office 365. Okay. Right.
So the only thing that might be interesting is managing the licenses to Project or in the tenant UI. Yeah. So I could see where as people are coming and going out of that organization, You're now going to have to work with your other team to manage those licenses on your behalf.
Okay, so therefore another question. Sorry, thanks. Do you have some kind? Is there a tool that you have that helps manage this, or is there something out there? Is there a best practice or the governance around enabling and disabling? Because that's going to be a huge conversation that's coming up. We actually have to have a governance model in place. But is there anything out there already?
I'm not aware of anything, okay. But certainly obviously the SharePoint and the Office 365 has been running a lot longer than just the Project Online. Yeah, okay. So it may be that Office 365 have got some documentation, perhaps even up on the link from the Trust Center or something like that, that might give you some ideas on that.
The way we're doing it is we're buying a pool of seats. Right, and then saying we'll enable, disable, but that's what we have right now. Anyway, thank you.
It's probably going to be a matter of your team building a level of trust with this larger team. Maybe, free drinks and pizza,
And Florida, California. One thing we heard is with Office 365 and obviously Project Online that you own the data. So that being said, how is it possible to extract that data from the installation?
So you're thinking about after you're done or you no longer want it or whatever, you want to have your data and take it off?
Let's say you want to restore that on-premise somewhere.
I'll let Chris
answer
that.
What's the best way to do that?
Well, Ludo said it in the keynote, so
right.
It must be true.
I know. Well, I heard.
I was going to follow up with Ludo. I'm sure we would make it happen if it had to happen.
Certainly, it's not something that through support we've had a request for yet. So I'm not quite sure what the route for that is, but we can check on that.
Like right now, I would say you could use Project Client and third party tools to extract it. But that doesn't. I have to go back and do some research myself. I was based on the comments that I heard.
Their scenario, maybe you want to replicate everything,
Yeah, timesheets.
Right, or you want to copy things to do different tests. Yeah. OK. Yeah, you don't have an answer.
I don't have an answer. Again, Office 365 folks may have a solution that we're not aware of just because we haven't had to deal with the issue yet.
Yeah.
But I can tell you after hearing the keynote, that's something I'm going to definitely follow up with on Thank Monday. You.
Yeah, I heard that too and thought, hmm.
Yeah. Hi. Are there any plans to bring back playbooks for Project 2013?
It's the Fluent Pro app.
That's right.
So it is. We work with those folks. So playbooks, we decided to end of life it, and we worked with the Fluent Pro folks to get them up to speed and everything, and that's how we see it moving forward.
Thank you.
Fluent Pro. Fluent Pro is the name of the company. They all have several different applications that can help you move data around between instances of Project Server.
Okay, so we're just about out of time. We can take one
quick question, sorry. Cache. I haven't seen any changes in the cache management in 2013. Has there been any changes to the cache management? And mostly checked in. That's our number one.
I was
going to
say which cache. We have lots of caches.
Local,
cache
the local, in your local, the local cache. On
oh, the active cache on WinProj?
Yeah.
Other than how we interact with it, I mean, there hasn't been any change in the how you administer it and stuff like that.
Our number one support call is my project says check-in pending, right? And it's not check-in pending. They just closed down WinProj before it had a chance to confirm with the server that it was actually checked in.
We've done some more work there, obviously, to try to, when we connect, we try to go back and say, okay, is there anything that we need to do in the cache here to say that things are checked in or checked out or whatever? In fact, when you first connect, you'll see that it says something down in the status bar like synchronizing latest changes or whatever. So there still could be instances where it's not able to go back to the server and say that, boy, this project really is checked in, but things should be improved in somewhat. Now, so another thing that we've changed on the whole cache front is that in the past, in 2010, for example, you would open up, you would say, I want to open up my project. It would go back to the server and say, okay, I have something in the cache right now, but are there any new changes? And it would try to do this merge and so forth. We now really have reverted back to, let's just go ahead and get the project versus trying to do all this merging and figure out what has changed, because that just ended up causing lots of problems.
I like
there.
That, yeah.
So the cache has changed in that respect.
But I mean, if you have a consistent repro, you might be hitting something, or they might be opening projects or closing project down in a way that sort of always hits this. So if you've got users that are getting a really consistent repro, there's something we need to sort of look in deeper, because it would be nice to get rid of that one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, we're out of time. Thank you all for coming. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.